Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. The alleged COVID-19 pandemic is very similar to the events of 9/11. There are many similarities between the two, and even some of the same players involved, particularly in the anthrax attacks after 9/11. The goal is one world government with a reduced world population and with vast controls over the people, made possible by increased use of technology and especially artificial intelligence, and by impoverishing most of the world's population, which is already underway through the lockdowns and business closures due to the COVID alleged pandemic. 9/11 helped the global elite to curtail people's civil liberties worldwide and to destroy the oil-rich countries that could stand in the way financially of this one-world government, which they now refer to as the Great Reset. Now, if you've been listening to the corporately controlled so-called mainstream media, you've been inundated with fear propaganda, which makes it difficult to entertain the possibility that you've been lied to about COVID-19. But as I've stated in previous shows, there are thousands of doctors and scientists here and around the world who disagree with what we're being told, and they're being censored. Some of these censored voices can be heard at bitchute.com, and shoot is C-H-U-T-E, so bitchute.com. Also, if you go to the websites globalresearch.ca and search there for any topic related to the coronavirus, the articles will pop up. Some other websites include childrenshealthdefense.org, childrenshealthdefense.org, highwire.com, medicineuncensored.com, thelastamericanvagabond.org, americasfrontlinedoctors.com, and for our European friends, acu2020.org. The alleged COVID-19 pandemic is made possible by faulty testing with the meaningless PCR tests, and also by the new way of counting cases, which is by counting anyone who tested positive as a case, even if they have no symptoms, and labeling people who die by other means as COVID-19 deaths. So we have meaningless tests, bogus case numbers, and inaccurate death counts. And all of this manipulated data is being used to create fear in all of us so that we will accept the lockdowns, forced face mask wearing, contact tracing, business closures, bankruptcies, and fast-tracked potentially harmful vaccines, and the suppression of inexpensive treatments that really work. On today's show, we'll hear part of a presentation by Dr. Tim O'Shea, a chiropractor and clinical nutritionist in practice for over 30 years and the founder of thedoctorwithin.com. The title of the presentation is Positive Tests Are Not COVID Cases. So here he is, Dr. Tim O'Shea. You decide who and what you want to believe.
Welcome to the Doctor Within podcast. I'm Dr. Tim O'Shea. In all our videos since March, we've shown how the lockdown has never been based on science, but instead on extreme politics. With COVID's recent resurgences, never has that fact been clearer. In this video, we're going to detail exactly how science has been rudely pushed aside by self-serving governors who have imposed the most totalitarian policy in American history, the open-ended lockdown. We should have seen the recent extensions coming. June was winding down. Restaurants and businesses were starting to sputter back to life. Everyone was looking forward to a boost from 4th of July weekend business, the gradual return to normal. The first signs of relief, right? And then, boom, the whip goes down. The lid is slapped back on, hard. The reason? The shakiest junk science yet. Hysterical cyber babble about outbreaks, spikes, cases, deaths. You know the story. Now, if you really think about it, the agenda might begin to dawn on you. We always presumed that lockdown would be lifted at the end of 1 month, then 2 months, as soon as the disease burned itself out, right? Each month, we all waited anxiously for the announcement, the reprieve. And then every time, extension after extension. Bureaucrats gradually became aware of this colossal new power they'd found. And worse, they learned how to hold on to it indefinitely.
Bernays terminology. In order to dissect the newest false narrative of resurgence, we have to start by defining the terms, those powerful words that are pop media's weapons for keeping people locked down. Terms like spike, tests, cases, outbreak. Let's do something pop media never does. Let's define our terms. Spike is a sudden, sharp uptick in positive tests. Tests are diagnostic procedures that identify a specific disease. Cases are individual people who become ill with a disease. An outbreak is when numbers of people in one place suddenly become sick. Now go back up and listen to these four definitions again. These are the terms everyday media uses to justify the perpetual lockdown. The corporate narrative has distorted these definitions just enough to achieve maximum compliance. Their greatest fear is that people will take a second look. So let's do that. First, yes, a spike is a sudden, sharp uptick in positive tests. That has certainly happened. In 2 months' time, we've gone from less than 25,000 tests per day to almost 600,000 tests per day. So of course there's going to be an enormous rise in positives in every state. So what? But here's the great lie. What is a case? A case is when someone gets sick from a disease. That's completely different from a positive test. These two terms are not synonymous, like media pretends. Whenever you hear a news story that uses the phrase, new spike of cases, change the channel. They're lying. There have been no spikes in cases since the beginning. So, if you don't remember anything else from this video, remember this. 99% of positive tests never get the disease. 99% of positive tests never become cases. The same is true with all coronavirus flu-type illnesses. The whole family are mild, self-limiting diseases that require no treatment. You're fine in 10 days. Okay, so got that? The enormous increase in positive tests does not pose any threat to the nation's health, because only about 1% of these positives ever become cases. And even those that do, only about 1% of those are serious enough to require treatment. But corporate news deliberately twists these two different numbers together and pretends that this huge spike in positives are all deathly ill, a major threat to the nation's health. And then they use the term outbreak with huge headline banners on every channel, just like they did right before 4th of July, right? Okay, so what's an outbreak again? An outbreak is when a number of people in a certain location suddenly come down with the same disease. Cases, not just positive tests, but actual people who get sick. There's no such thing as an outbreak of positive tests. But pop media saw an opportunity for maximum hysteria. They're pretending a sudden increase of positive tests in a location is an outbreak of disease. And this one deliberate error is at the core of the marketing of the entire COVID phenomenon and forcing the return to lockdown. What is CDC's definition of an outbreak? How many people in one place does it take to meet the definition of outbreak? Take a wild guess. Give up? Three. Not kidding. Look it up. Okay, 4th of July. So suddenly, just as 4th of July weekend was coming, we had the preposterous claim that suddenly 37 states across the U.S. had all simultaneously spiked exponential numbers of cases in 3 days' time. Major alerts on every TV station. You saw it. This is physically, immunologically impossible. No disease known to man could spread like that across thousands of miles in a few days. Again, the false implication was that these were all new cases, not just positive tests. That lie was repeated all day for several days, creating nationwide panic, the handiwork of an irresponsible media whose objective is always to make every situation an emergency. The imaginary outbreak was then used as the rationale to derail the return to normal. Suddenly, we're back to square one. It's not biology, it's not science. This reversal was 100% media contrived at the direction of the bureaucrats. Pretending like all positive tests were cases of COVID made it look like there was this virulent outbreak of sick people sweeping across the country. But of course, there wasn't. So how long will the lockdown last? This is the number one question on every American's mind for months now. We're all getting a taste of what prison must be like, right? With one exception, prisoners know when they're getting out. Again, where are all the sick people? I mean, think about it. Have you ever known anyone with COVID? Even one person? Where is this epidemic? The nation's hospitals have all been empty for 4 months, and despite the devious CNN chatter, they still are. For maximum shock value, pop media always treats COVID like it's the bubonic plague from the 14th century. If that were true, we'd have death wagons up and down the streets of every neighborhood all these months, carting away corpses off to mass lime pits outside every city. But we see none of this. All we've seen for months is a bunch of healthy people going into grocery stores with masks on their faces. So where's the epidemic? Our belief in these engineered numbers is the only thing that can maintain the illusion and prevent the return to normal. Okay, so again, how long will lockdown last? Let's pretend for a moment, just for the sake of argument, that COVID-19 is a real viral disease from the same family as the flu, as the experts tell us, with the same symptoms, which is generally mild, with a 99% resolution in a week or so, no treatment required. Suspending herd immunity. All legitimate science will tell us that any such mild disease would have long since burned itself out through the population by now, actually months ago, and would have mutated several times into something even milder and then disappeared. True herd immunity, adaptation, just like every other disease in human history. Same as what happens every year with the flu. How it peaks out after a month or so, tapers off, and then disappears. But now suddenly we have COVID, marketed as this indestructible, lethal, killer disease, even though it has the same symptomatology and mortality as any run-of-the-mill flu. And so, in violation of every principle of traditional immunology, we're supposed to believe that this particular illness has resisted mutation now for 6 months and continues to be the same unalterable threat to life and limb, and that it's going to continue unchanged indefinitely. That's the fairy tale subtext that every masked biped believes, whether they know it or not. No other disease in history has shown this degree of resilience. What they're claiming here is impossible. Diseases simply don't act this way, resisting adaptation month after month. If they did, the human race would have gone extinct eons ago. The science. Tony Robbins has a few videos and podcasts where he interviews some actual medical authorities who disagree with the daily narrative. Remember, these individuals all profess that COVID actually exists as a novel disease. Even with that caveat, here are some of their discoveries taken from that interview. First off, Stanford's Michael Levitt, MD. Levitt finds that decisions for a mass shutdown were made from an anti-scientific dynamic. He reminds us that epidemiologists will always exaggerate the numbers so no one can accuse them of mitigating a new threat. Normally, diseases burn their way through a population until a saturation point is reached, usually at around one death per thousand, like in any typical flu season. That's true herd immunity. But COVID is being marked as something unique in history, using numbers roulette, the fraudulent new diagnostic criteria for counting cases. If everybody who walks into a clinic with a fever or a headache is counted as a case with no testing, well then obviously COVID numbers are going to soar. Tony's next guest was Scott Jensen, MD from Minnesota. Jensen has a word to describe diagnosing COVID when there's no evidence. The word is incentivized. Here's an example of incentive. Jensen got a memo from the Minnesota State Department of Health advising physicians how to complete a death certificate. They were coached to massage a cause of death, even if COVID is a third or fourth diagnosis, to list it as the cause of death, even if only suspected and never tested. It's called comorbidity. Jensen quotes Dr. Birx of the White House COVID Task Force, quote, "In this country, we've taken a very liberal approach to mortality," Dr. Birx said. "There are other countries that if you had a pre-existing condition, a heart or kidney problem, some countries are recording that as a heart issue or a kidney issue and not a COVID-19 death," unquote. Not so in the U.S. Here, a patient might be dying of congestive heart disease or emphysema and be in ICU, then, a week before they die, might test positive for COVID. The cause of death will then be listed as COVID. That's been standard policy since March. Jensen talks of several cases of people killed in motorcycle accidents who tested positive for COVID after death and were then listed as COVID deaths. These cases are easy to find. Just Google motorcycle deaths and COVID. Here's one from California. County Health Officer Gail Newell, quote, "If anyone that has a COVID diagnosis has died, it automatically feeds into the database as a COVID death, even if it wasn't a COVID death. For example, a 25-year-old dies in a motorcycle accident and then our coroner finds out that he incidentally did have COVID at that time. The state counts that as a COVID death, although clearly he died in a motorcycle accident," unquote. So across the country, in all hospitals and morgues, anyone who dies of anything is tested for COVID. If a test comes up positive, they're under instructions to list COVID as the cause of death. Beginning to see where they're getting all these death statistics from? And of course, the daily numbers are the only thing that fuels political decision making. Just like now, with the desperate posturing of a resurgence, right? Now, of course, there are also financial incentives for COVID numbers, as Dr. Jensen describes. For example, Medi-Cal will automatically pay $4,600 for a diagnosis of pneumonia. But if the patient was also positive for COVID, the code automatically jumps to $39,000. So from $4,600 to $39,000. So physicians and hospitals are incentivized to diagnose as many COVID cases as possible. Here's a quote from the New York Times. Quote, one senior White House official has mentioned that hospitals could be inflating their coronavirus patient counts, responding to financial incentives. Medicare offers higher payments to providers for treating coronavirus patients, unquote. Bureaucrats are motivated to claim the highest numbers possible. The best way to power keeps people frightened by false threats. Then tell people to follow you, we'll protect you, and germaphobes will follow right along. New cases or just positive tests? Next on Tony's list was Alan Preston, MD. This doctor explains exactly how the case fatality rate has been constantly overreported since day one. Remember, they started way back in March with that prediction for 2 million U.S. deaths? Everybody keeps forgetting, COVID is a mild disease for 99% of people who get it, requiring no treatment, total recovery in 1 week. You'll never see that fact in fake news. Nor will you ever see the numbers of the recovered from the week before being subtracted from the total. Actually, the president got it right in his 4th of July speech when he said, 99% of COVID positives are harmless. Now, Preston recalls how the numbers suddenly peaked in mid-March in an impossible way. Suddenly, one day we saw an exponential spike in testing followed by a spike in cases. But we didn't even need the testing. Anyone with the slightest sniffle was immediately diagnosed with COVID and counted. That includes flu cases, who, Preston notes, are being commingled with COVID numbers everywhere. Did you know that if you had a flu shot in the last 10 years, you will test positive for COVID? In all Tony's interviews, none of these experts ever defines what a positive test means. Tony himself notes that in April, CDC made a formal announcement that testing was no longer necessary to make a COVID diagnosis. And that's exactly what we saw with our video, $5,000 reward. After tens of thousands of people had seen that video where we were offering a $5,000 reward for proof of a COVID diagnosis, not one person came forward. So with no proof of diagnosis required, bean counters can claim any numbers they want, anytime they want, in any location they want, which is exactly what they've been doing. Dr. Preston is not optimistic about the coming vaccine. He reminds us they've been working on a SARS vaccine for 10 years. Flu vaccine has been a spectacular failure for the last 15 years. An AIDS vaccine has eluded Gates for 30 years. So why would a rushed COVID vaccine be any better? Fauci is cheerleading that we can't go back to normal until we have a vaccine is obviously one driving force behind the protracted lockdown. It's no metaphor that we can be held ransom until such time as a vaccine is forced upon the population as the final cure and savior. The problem is, there might never be a COVID vaccine. Lockdown suppresses the immune system. Next, Dr. Preston shows just how our lockdown policy is immunosuppressive. Lockdown prevents normal saturation of a new disease trying to reach herd immunity because it isolates people from normal interaction and contact. In New York City, for example, 84% of new infections were from people who stayed home all the time. The same is true everywhere. A strong immune system must be constantly challenged by gentle, regular stimulation from normal human interaction. Thus, the junk science of social distancing. Despite the daily narrative, hospitals everywhere have been empty for the past 3 months, for three reasons. First, COVID is a mild self-limiting disease requiring no treatment. Second, hospitals were told to cancel most procedures for the first month in preparation for the imagined flood of patients, which never happened. Then, radical politics prevented hospitals from changing that policy, which was based on an erroneous model. So, doctors and nurses nationwide have been laid off, and hospitals remain empty because, try as they may, they can't make COVID a serious disease. And third, many germaphobes are afraid to go anywhere near hospitals. Throughout the COVID phenomenon, the entire hospital policy was a textbook example of how to shoot yourself in the foot. So why is this trendy COVID exempt from all natural laws of immunology? Why is it supposedly this continual threat that will never go away, so that now we have to put permanent plexiglass screens in every 7-Eleven and directional arrows in every grocery store aisle from now on, and wear face masks from now till the second coming of Christ? Why? Where's the evidence that COVID, which is no worse than the flu, is the first permanent disease in history? Preston concludes by saying, "It makes no sense to tank the economy in order to protect ourselves from an everyday disease." Next on Tony's podcast was Michael Roizen, MD, from Cleveland Clinic. Roizen, too, decries the consequences of mass lockdown with these stats. Listen carefully. At least 46% of all COVID cases in the U.S. were from just two states, New York and New Jersey, 46%. More than 50% of cases are found in nursing homes. 97% of COVID deaths are people over 65. 97%. For those younger than 18, COVID is practically non-existent. It is no threat. Most legitimate authorities agree. One is Scott Atlas, MD, who concurs, quote, "Schools should be open. COVID presents a virtually zero risk for children. Even in the rare instance they get a flu, they cannot transmit it to other people," unquote. Dr. Atlas tells us the only ones who should ever have been isolated because of COVID are elderly people with underlying conditions and other immune-compromised people. Risk for people under 60 is less than or equal to the risk for seasonal flu. Quoting CDC then, Atlas says, "Of the first 100,000 COVID deaths, 99.98% were not in children. COVID poses virtually zero risk for children. Children cannot transmit the disease." Dan Erickson, MD, proves the same thing, how COVID is virtually, quote, "no threat to kids, with almost no cases or deaths nationwide. Schools should open immediately and should never have been shut down," unquote. So, we tank the economy and close down our schools for nothing. For this reason, Roizen says, it's obvious we should only be quarantining people 70 and older. There's simply no proven risk for anyone else. This is the first quarantine in history where the healthy are the ones being isolated, not the infected. The first quarantine in history where the healthy are isolated, not the infected. Roizen tells us there would have been no lockdown if decisions had been made by doctors instead of by bureaucrats. 97% of the population needed no protection whatsoever. No face masks, no house arrest, no business closures.
You were just listening to a speech given by Dr. Tim O'Shea. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.